From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, it's still unclear what the exact impact will be on New York after President Trump's decision to end subsidies to health insurance companies to help lower Americans pay for their health insurance. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on Vice President Pence's visit to Buffalo, and Governor Cuomo makes a trip to the North Country to town an economic development agreement. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The fallout continues from President Trump's decision to end subsidies to health insurance companies to help lower-income Americans pay for their health insurance. But as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, it's still unclear what the exact impact will be in New York.
As soon as the president followed through with his threat to end the subsidies, New York and several other states filed a lawsuit to try to get the money back. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman says it will sow dysfunction in the state's and the nation's health care system.
He said himself that he wanted to see Obamacare explode. Well, this is an effort to blow it up, and we're not going to let him do it.
It's not clear, though, how exactly the end of the subsidies will affect New York. That's because the state uses them in a different way than most of the other states. Only New York and Minnesota use the subsidies to create their own programs to provide health coverage to people with too many assets to be eligible for Medicaid, but who do not earn enough to afford health care plans offered on the Affordable Care Act exchanges. In New York, that plan, which serves around 680,000 New Yorkers, is known as the Essential Plan. The Greater New York Hospital Association's Laura Alfredo says the president's decision to end the subsidies undermines the program and could reverse progress the state has made in cutting the number of uninsured in half.
It will result in about $870 million hole in funding for the program, putting New York State in basically an untenable position of having to find the funds to make up for it.
Bill Hammond, health policy analyst for the fiscal watchdog group, the Empire Center, says on the surface, it seems like the Essential Plan is finished without the federal subsidy.
It might mean that the state has to cancel the whole program.
But technically, he says, Trump's order ends subsidies that went directly to the insurance companies. The order does not say anything about state-created plans. And Hammond says they might be in a separate legal category.
It's not absolutely clear what's going to happen to the Essential Plan and the money for it.
Governor Cuomo's Medicaid director, Jason Helgerson, also says it's unclear what the exact effect of the subsidy cut will be on New York's health programs. In the meantime, Governor Cuomo has raised the idea of a special session in December to deal with the federal health care cuts. In addition to the end to the subsidies, there are other threats to the state's health care budget. Congress failed to renew funds for public hospitals to pay for the state's remaining uninsured. And the Child Health Plus program, which provided care to poor children, was also not renewed. Governor Cuomo has said that could cost the state billions of dollars.
We still face the health care cuts and the health care proposals. That would decimate the state of New York.
There's still a chance, though, that Congress could act to continue some of the funding when the federal budget is finalized in December. Hammond says state leaders could be in a difficult position if they make budget decisions, like raising taxes or cutting programs, before they know what Congress and the president will do.
If you were to do either of those things, and then Congress, you know, changes its mind and reappropriates the money, the state would have wasted its time and possibly disrupted the coverage of people for no good reason.
If the Essential Plan were to end, enrollees would not be left without any health care, but they would have to purchase plans through the health care exchange, and they'd have to pay significantly more money for premiums and health care. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week, the Vice President, Mike Pence, made a trip to Buffalo in support of Chris Collins, someone who's been under an ethics scandal, as well as someone who was the architect, along with John Faso, the Republican from New York's 19th district, who were trying to get their amendment into the health care plan, which failed. Now Cuomo, the governor, of course, seeing on the horizon that Pence was to visit, took a preemptive swipe, saying that the answer to any of their ideas basically is no.
Well, look, Collins and John Faso have been there for the president, and I think he probably thinks he owes them, and he wants to get back, and he wants to help out Collins. Now, Collins is under a real dark light from his work, trying to make some money, perhaps, and that's what the accusation is. And we don't know if it's true. Somebody's innocent until proven guilty, but it doesn't look good for him. It does look like that's the kind of ethical challenge that will get a person out of office. Right wing versus left wing, sometimes not. But when you are seen as somebody who's taking advantage of your political office in order to make money illegally or unethically, you know, there has got to be a sense that this is not a person who represents my values. So no question it's going to cost them. Now, how popular Mike Pence is in Buffalo is another story. And even the president kids him about his stance on homosexuals, for example, which is furthest right of anything you could possibly imagine. So Pence is not an attractive candidate to many New Yorkers, although Buffalo can be a more conservative place than the rest of New York.
Meantime, the governor, because of the threats from Washington on New York, is trying to decide whether to hold a special session.
Well, it's a funny state. The Republicans, in many ways, have to pay homage to this Democratic governor, because if he wants them out of there, they're going to be out of there. And up to now, most of us believe that he's been instrumental in keeping the Republicans in power. So they owe him something, and they're afraid of him. That's how he, for example, got his SAFE Act through, and some of the other progressive things that he has done in New York, because they're scared to cross him, because then they're out of power. I'm going to simply say that if he really thinks that New York will be bankrupt as a result of the Trump policies on health care and other things, he may have to call a special session, because that money's got to come from somewhere, and he can't let people just lose all of the things that they've gained in New York State.
In other news this week, let's stick with the governor and his run for re-election. There's been some Republicans lining up, and it's now official for Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, who filed papers this week with the State Board of Elections.
Well, I know Mark Molinaro. He's been on our air a lot. A decent fellow. And he may give the governor a run for his money. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, the third term is always a difficult one. In Mario Cuomo's case, the third term was a very difficult election, and the fourth done him in. So this is now an election in which we know that Andrew Cuomo has about $26-27 million. That's a lot of money in readiness for this election. And you're going to see all kinds of ads extolling all the things that he says that he's done. And that's going to be very difficult to counter if you don't have any real money of your own. That doesn't mean that some of the big guys won't see a potential victory here and put some big money into Molinaro's campaign if Molinaro is the candidate. Meantime, you've got other Republicans who want to run from around the state. I think, for example, Mr. Astorino from Westchester County, he got really slaughtered the last time. And when I mean slaughtered, I mean, of course, politically slaughtered. And it sounds to a lot of people like more of the same old, same old. Then you get Harry Wilson, who a lot of people like because he's very good with figures and knows all about money. And he is popular in some branches of the Republican Party. But I think Molinaro, a young man who, relatively young man, who seems to be a fresh face, becomes an instant front runner. We do know that Chris Gibson, who was a very popular congressman from the 19th Congressional District, was very interested, went around, talked to Republican leaders. They weren't interested in him. That was their mistake. That was stupid on their part, because he was the kind of Republican who could cross these boundary lines. And so what we have is a terrible situation where Republicans may be out there killing each other and making it even easier for Andrew Cuomo to win.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo this week signed legislation to help increase organ donations. Sponsored by a Hudson Valley senator, the law is named for a Rockland County resident who received a heart transplant. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Lauren's law is now permanent. Lauren is Lauren Shields, a Stony Point resident who underwent a heart transplant when she was 8. The high school senior is now 17.
You know, speaking firsthand and from a personal experience, you know, transplantation does work and it saves lives. And I wouldn't be here today if I didn't have my heart transplant and I wasn't given a second chance at life. And if it weren't for someone who took the extra step to sign up to become an organ donor, I wouldn't be here.
State Senator David Carlucci, an independent Democrat, sponsored the bill that removes expiration language.
By having Lauren's law permanent, what it does is when you go to the DMV, you're asked the question, would you like to be an organ donor, yes, or skip the question. It's something that you have to decide when you're getting your driver's license, when you're getting your driver ID or non-driver ID. So this is going to make a big difference. It's really building upon the successes that we've had over the past few years.
The bill first passed in 2012. Carlucci says some 10,000 New Yorkers are waiting for transplants. In fact, according to Live On New York, the state ranks last in the percentage of residents registered as organ donors. Brooklyn Democrat Felix Ortiz sponsored the bill in the Assembly, and Democratic Assemblywoman Sandy Galef is a co-sponsor. She represents portions of Putnam and Westchester counties. Her office found that, according to Donate Life America, as of 2016, Putnam County ranked 27th and Westchester 52nd of New York's 62 counties in the percentage of residents registered as organ donors. Galef says education is key. Shields agrees.
I just think it's really important for everyone to stay educated on the cause and for people to continuously be reminded of how important it is in New York. You know, I don't want the law to just become permanent and then people forget about how important it is, because there are always things that we can continue to do to increase the numbers.
Again, Carlucci.
So this is something we call mandated choice, that you're really mandated to make a decision. And you can skip the question, but you have to decide to skip the question. So we found that this is something that can dramatically increase the amount of people enrolling. Since it's been on the books, we've already seen a difference. We know there's other things that we need to do as well, but this is really the foundation of what I believe will turn things around in New York and save people's lives.
In addition to Lauren's law, Cuomo signed an executive order directing the state health department to work with all state agencies to provide additional opportunities to become an organ donor, including through an updated Donate Life registry. The subject of organ donation was on the big screen at the Woodstock Film Festival that wrapped up October 15th. The documentary Bean tells the story of two young women who were a match on Tinder. One suffers from lupus and was in kidney failure. The other healthy, and as it turned out, after about a month of dating, a perfect kidney match. Lori Interlicchio says the choice was obvious no matter where the relationship was headed.
And I don't think that it was necessarily like I was head over heels in love with Alana. It was just like I'd never really thought about the idea that I could do this for a person before. And I remember having to tell my parents that too, to get them to understand that, like, if this was one of the girls on my cheerleading team, like, I'd want to get tested, or, like, you know. And when I went to the doctor's appointment, I told them, like, even if I'm not a match, I still want some more information about this to just see if, like, I could do this for someone else, because it just seems like this not crazy thing to do that could help someone a lot.
Alana Duran talks about how both matches have changed her life.
I guess now I'm just thinking, like, wow, so much has changed, and, like, I don't have to do dialysis anymore, and, like, my heart function has improved, like, dramatically. So, like, that's great. And then, like, with our relationship-wise, like, we've only been, like, what, stronger and, like, I don't know,
We just moved in together.
Yeah, we moved in together just this summer. I actually made the move from New York to Michigan to be with Lori, because I'm like, I'm not going to do the long distance thing anymore.
Interlechio attends law school in Michigan. The two initially lived on Long Island, and the transplant surgery took place at Stony Brook University Hospital in February 2016. Both 27-year-old Duran and 24-year-old Interlechio aim to provide information and education about what it means to become a donor. And the film's director is now on board with that mission as well. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Norsk Titanium is the only company that manufactures FAA-approved structural titanium components for the aerospace industry using a patented rapid plasma 3D printing technique. Based in Norway, its global manufacturing facility is located in Plattsburgh. This week, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo visited the plant and officially dedicated the facility. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there.
New York State and SUNY Polytechnic invested $125 million to bring the company to the state. In September 2016, Norsk announced its 67,500-square-foot Plattsburgh manufacturing plant had opened, and a month later, the first rapid plasma machines were installed. Nine are currently operating, four of which were installed last week. 11 more machines will be delivered by the end of the year. On Tuesday, Governor Andrew Cuomo made his first visit to the Norsk manufacturing plant since the rapid plasma machines were installed and cut a ribbon with officials to officially dedicate the plant.
Titanium is basically the strength of steel but the weight of aluminum. So it's always a better application if you could manufacture it in a way that would be cost competitive. And that's exactly what this company does. This is my first view with these machines. I don't understand it. I watch the machine operate. It's very, very impressive. How it does it, I have no idea, but it works.
The governor told a crowd of local officials and business people that Norsk has brought groundbreaking technology to the North Country, joining the state's growing clusters of innovation technology.
The potential applications are endless, and that's what Buffalo, now having Tesla and Panasonic making the best solar panels in the hemisphere, Rochester with new technologies on photonics. But here, it is about how do you make titanium parts faster and less expensive, and how adaptable can you be?
Norsk is producing parts for Boeing's 707 Dreamliner. It has also partnered with Spirit AeroSystems, which builds larger aerostructures for customers including Boeing, Airbus, Sikorsky, Northrop Grumman, and Rolls-Royce. Chief Technology Officer John Pilla says they will use Norsk components.
The cutting-edge technology being used here in New York is having an impact far beyond your state in our global aerospace economy and company. There's potentially thousands of parts on a variety of programs that are candidates for this advanced process. Achieving a 30% reduction in part costs and being able to get those parts more quickly while meeting all the quality requirements is a differentiator for Spirit. And we are evaluating all our titanium parts for this process.
Norsk Titanium CEO Warren Boley said the company looked at 48 states and decided to locate its U.S. headquarters and manufacturing plant in New York, in part due to the innovation mindset.
I like to say that we can make in an hour or a day in the 21st century what took a year in the 20th century. So this is a very, very big deal. Today, Governor Cuomo was making transformational investments in cutting-edge industries like 3D printing here in Plattsburgh, in drones, in data, in solar manufacturing and energy storage, and photonics that's spurring 21st century industrial revolution.
Norsk is currently leasing its manufacturing plant. A 100,000-square-foot production facility will be built at the former Clinton County Airport. Construction will begin next spring, and Norsk plans to occupy the new facility by late 2018 or early 2019. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Well, get ready to dig deeper into your wallet this winter. National Grid is forecasting higher heating bills for New York. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
When the winter winds begin to howl and we spend more time indoors, we'll be turning up the thermostat and using more energy. That's part of living in the Northeast. National Grid spokesman Nathan Stone details what factors come into play when utility companies calculate the estimated cost of natural gas.
A lot of it has to do with weather patterns over the last 10 years. We're not actually doing the forecasting. We're just looking at the information that we have that's been made available to us from various weather services. We look at typical usage, what people are actually using, kind of gives us a baseline for how much gas we're going to be pushing through our systems. In this particular case, we're looking at most of the increase is coming from the commodity side of it, which is the actual gas itself. So as you know, National Grid purchases gas and electricity, for that matter, for its customers and calls it back to them at cost. So we don't make any profit on that.
Stone says the winter heating season runs November 1st through March 31st.
That's our typical winter heating season. We're forecasting that the bills are going to be 4.6% higher based on an average of 713 therms of gas usage, which basically, nuts and bolts, boils down to about $4 a month.
Bob Connor is a co-organizer of the Renewable Energy and Sustainable Living Fair, says the first order of business is to look for ways to insulate your home or apartment, especially around windows and doors. A longer-term solution involves installing replacement windows and insulation-backed siding.
And also, in the short term, I would strongly recommend in New York, people call NYSERDA, because they will do a free energy audit of one's home or at least property and make recommendations about what are the best ways to save money and also the payback times.
Co-organizer Becky Meyer invites consumers to visit the fair for more energy and money-saving ideas.
It can be a little overwhelming, all of the options out there for renewable energy. And so I think of this as one-stop shopping for information and actual products. You'll have solar, geothermal, insulation, composting, almost every topic you can think of that will lead to a more renewable living life will all be there. You can ask your questions that you're wondering about. You can sign up for audits or someone to come to your house to see what might be possible. You can ride an electric vehicle car. One of the things I'm really pushing is that people can sign up for an energy supplier that supplies through renewable energy rather than fossil fuels, and it's usually cheaper.
The fair is October 28 from 10 to 4 p.m. at the Doane Stewart School, 199 Washington Avenue, Rentschler, New York. There's more at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1742. Or just listen to podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.